six, five, six, seven, eight. Hello and welcome to Study Hub, the podcast that aims to give you the tips and tricks to help you do your best in the Leaving Cert. My name is Maura Fay and I'll be your host for RTE Study Hub over the next 6 weeks as we bring you some of the best teachers in the country on a range of subjects. Today we start with English Paper 1, music, and a look at how to mind yourself in the run-up to exams. But first, English Paper 1.
Another cold brew? Don't mind if I cold do. Nailed it. I am loving this machine that Charles brought in.
It is nice. The trick is to let the coffee warm up the room temperature. I'm already on my second cup.
This is my third.
Stop! You're drinking too much!
Whoa, what's going on? Charles, why are you talking so slow?
I'm not. I'm normal. We're all normal.
God, if you're not going slow, that means we're going faster. Are we going fast? Can anyone tell if we're going fast?
I don't think we're going fast at all in any way whatsoever. I feel like we're going slow in every way whatsoever. Captain, how do you feel?
Great, excellent, amazing. I feel better than I've ever felt in a moment in my entire life.
So we're all fine.
Yep.
A cold opening from Brooklyn 99 there. What could that have to do with English Paper 1? Conor Murphy from Skibbereen Community College in County Cork joins us from our Cork studio and will explain all. Conor, before we get into cold opens, English Higher Level Paper 1, explain to me the format of the paper.
You got two big sections, the text section, which is comprehension and a formal piece of writing, and you have an essay to write as well. The classic essay, the essay is worth 100 marks, 25% of your overall exam, and the other two questions are worth 50 marks each, which it's easy. It's good to keep in mind that they're also 50 marks is also what you get for the poetry, so you should spend as much time on paper one with those 250 as you do on the poetry, which not a lot of people think about. The A section has got you simple comprehension. You read a piece and then you answer three questions. Very rigid kind of format. The first question is basically a content question. The second question is your opinion. And the third question asks you about the style and techniques used by the writer, and you identify them and explain how powerful they work, how powerful they were, how they worked, how they didn't work, etc. And then B, you've got a very formal essay to write, very formal piece. Could be a podcast, could be an opinion piece, could be a blog. And you have to follow a very strict format. They give you 3 points you have to touch on, and you have to touch on those 3 points, and then you get to choose your essay. And the essay, you get a selection of 7. There's always a couple of short stories, a discursive piece, an opinion piece. There's always a speech, and sometimes there's a descriptive piece, and sometimes there isn't.
Okay, so you're sitting in the exam hall, you're handed your exam paper. Where do you start?
Well, you start by trying not to panic. First of all, it's your first exam, and paper one is a lovely exam. The paper one is your friend. So you're going in and you're going to meet your friend, and your friend wants to know all about you, and the friend wants to know, but the friend does like you to structure stuff. So the first thing you do is you go to the essay at the back, and you'll have gone in with a preconception of what kind of essay you want to do. So you quickly read the titles. And after a moment of severe panic, you pause and you tick at least 2 that you think might suit you. And then you go and you look at the B's, they're the formal pieces, and you look again to see which one of those would suit you best, because they can be a bit tricky sometimes. So you look into which one do I like, and you mark that one, and then you go to the A and you pick your A. It's important to remember, and students always forget this, you can't do an A and a B from the same text. So you pick your B, because they can be tricky, and then you got 2 texts left from your selection of 3, so 2 left, and then you pick the A. And you pick the A by reading the first paragraph and reading the questions and seeing which ones suit you best. You should be able to do, all Leaving Cert higher level students should be able to do any of the A's, because they're very rigid, very structured, and you'd be able to do them. There'd be no problem. B's can be a little bit tricky. And the essay, once you get to the essay, I guarantee you'll be fine. Because what you'll do then is, you see, you'll do the A, you'll do the B, and then you'll do the essay. And exactly like my old English teacher told me back in the 1800s, your subconscious will be working away on your essay. And by the time you get there, you'll have some kind of ideas, and then you plan away.
How long do you get for the exam, and how long should you spend on each question?
I've been teaching for 25 plus years, and I have to do the maths of it every single year. I'm an English teacher, not a maths teacher. The exam is 170 minutes long. I've tried to learn this off, and you spend, there's about 10 minutes to look around the paper, and you try to do that as quickly as you possibly can. That's why you don't have to read every single text. You just read the first paragraph and the questions. Otherwise, you're eating into your time. And give yourself about 40 minutes for the A, about 40 minutes for the B, and about 80 minutes then, an hour and 20 then, for the essay. Now, if you're going over a little bit, these are movable feasts. Mm-hmm. But what you can't do, and what you never want to do, is leave less than an hour and 10 for the essay. That is the minimum you have, because you need to plan it carefully, and then you need to write it. And you need at least an hour writing it. So I would suggest what you do is, when you sit down, you write down the time in A. So it's at 9:30, 9:35, or 9:40, depending on how long you're taking to write it, until the time is up. So what's 9:40 to 10 past 10? I think that's 40 minutes, isn't it?
Yep.
So 9:40 to 10:20, and then you know that, oh, I better finish at 10:20. And you leave a bit of space in case you want to come back to it. And then you do the B, exactly the same thing, 10:20 plus 40 minutes, whatever that is. And you write that down and you do the B, you stop, and then you do the essay. And if you have time at the end, you can come back and if you want to add bits and pieces of them. Because remember, the essay is 25% of your exam. That's so you want to make sure you do that well and you do that right.
Talk to me about essay writing. You have thoughts about aesthetic writing and persuasive writing.
So there are so many different varieties. This goes for B as well. There's a lot of varieties of essays and people get very rigid and very concerned about, oh, this is a personal essay. I must have these rules must apply. This is a speech. These rules must apply. So instead of thinking about the genre and what rules apply to that genre, think about it in terms of a continuum of writing techniques. So you're going in with all these writing techniques and you're going from aesthetic writing on one side of the line to persuasive or very kind of formal and rigid rules on the other with loads of techniques. So aesthetic writing is kind of descriptive. My students call it aesthetic writing, but I find that a little bit rude. I'm a little bit older than them, so I'm going to insist in calling it aesthetic.
Okay.
They're embarrassed by me, but I don't care. I'm sticking with aesthetic. So that's descriptive writing. It's kind of like poetry and you're using similes and all alliteration, all the good stuff. And then as you go along the line, you go into persuasive, which is much more formal and much more use of techniques and a very clear structure. So when you're looking at what you're writing, you're deciding, where are my techniques? I might take a little bit over here and I might take a little bit over there. For instance, my students today were looking at a piece of personal writing and there were a few rhetorical questions thrown in there. And there was a few descriptive elements thrown in there. So the personal writing isn't all down at one end. It's not all these rigid rules. You can pick and choose which techniques you want. So when you sit down, you can put your little aesthetic to persuasive line on your sheet of paper, just to remind you exactly how you're going along. And when you plan your essay, you can just jot down a few techniques. Because what you don't want to do is you don't want to start waffling, no matter what the essay is. You don't want to waffle and ramble on and on. What you want to make sure is that you are engaging the reader. And that's what techniques do. They engage the reader.
Okay. How long should your essay be? Because there's nothing that strikes greater fear into my heart when I'm sitting there in exam hall and somebody asks for more paper and I've only three pages written. How long should your essay be?
I must admit, I was one of those people who did that. I did that calculatedly during one of my leaving cert exams. I waited for 20 minutes, put up my hand and asked for paper just to annoy my friend who was sitting behind me. And he asked me afterwards, did you do that on purpose? I said, yeah, just to freak you out. I said, it did. So you write about 6 to 7 pages. So I go through them. So okay. A1 is a page and a little bit. A2 is a page and a little bit. A3 is about 2 pages. The B is about 3 to 4 pages. Don't write more than 4 pages for the B. These are new booklets as well, you see. So they're not the old A4 sheets. They're new booklets, so they're slightly smaller. So the pages are a little bit different to what they used to be. So you don't, in the B, you don't want to write less than 3, but you definitely don't want to write more than 4, because what you're doing is you're wasting time. You don't need to. So you're wasting time when you could be writing your essay. And the essay then is between 6 and 7 plus. I mean, some people write more and they need to write more for whatever they're writing in their handwriting. So you don't want to write less than 6 pages.
Okay. Finally, Connor, and quickly, any tips to avoid dropping marks, like looking for, you know, make sure you're spelling everything correctly, not messing up grammar? What are the tips and tricks to avoid dropping unnecessary marks?
Paragraphs are the big one. I'm always thinking of paragraphs. Make sure you use your paragraphs well. A lot of people talk about spelling, but by the time you're in the exam, if you start thinking too worried about your spelling, you're going to kind of pause and you're going to lose the flow of everything. So make sure that you have your paragraphs nice and clear, especially for A1, 2 and 3, because they're very clear. They're very structured answers. So you need to have very clear structure on your page to show the examiner, this is my first point, this is my second point, etc., etc. And after that, then use of the kind of creative use of paragraphs works really well in the essay writing. The other thing is, and this is my top tip for how to do well, is the paper is structured to help the student. So you have A1, 2, and 3. And remember, 3 is all about techniques. So the examiner, the paper is telling you, don't forget about the techniques. So when you're doing B, the B gives you a structure. Mm-hmm. 3, you must hit these 3 topics. And don't forget to use the techniques that you looked at in A3 in your B. So then you go to your essay, you're looking at structure like in B, techniques like in A3, I must make sure I use all those. And they're the top tips for not losing marks, because they're structure and they're techniques. And then there's your voice and your own ideas and your own wonderful opinions, and let them come through the essay.
Before I let you go, Connor, I mentioned there the importance of a cold. We talked about cold opening in Brooklyn Nine-Nine. Talk to me about the importance of your opening line in your essay.
All right. I was literally speaking to my students earlier on today. We were reading a chapter of Jeanette McCurdy's book, I'm Glad My Mom Died. Jeanette McCurdy was as Sam in Sam and Cat and in iCarly, and she wrote a wonderful memoir, which is full of fantastic chapters, which are basically little personal essays. So we read one of those and we noticed how she's straight to the point, straight into the story. It was about her first kiss that she had to do on film. And she's describing the first kiss at the beginning. You don't want to bore the reader, which is me, which is the examiner, with a boring essay opening paragraph explaining what you're going to do in your personal essay, for instance, or what you're going to do in your speech, or what you're going to do in anything. What you want to do is you want to think about it and what's appropriate and get in there quickly. Just like Brooklyn Nine-Nine with a cold open. Get in there, grab their attention. So Jeanette McCurdy was brilliant at this. That could have been an essay about an important event in her life, for instance. And if as I said this to the students, if the students got that, a load of them would write, yeah, we have a lot many important events in our lives. This event and that event and next event. I don't want to read that. That's so boring. Get rid of it. Go straight instead to whatever that event was. And in this particular instance, it was her first kiss on screen, and she described it in great detail, and it was very funny and very moving as she went on then. And then what you do then is about 3 paragraphs down, then you do the, you know, if there are certain events that are very important in her life. So you're moving what you would have had as your introduction, the boring introduction, you're rewriting it, making it a little bit more interesting, and you're putting it in like the third paragraph, because you do have to reflect.
Great advice there. Thank you so much, Connor. That is Connor Murphy from Skibbereen Community College. Beelzebub has a devil put aside for me, for me, for me. So you think you can stop me and spit my eye? A little bit of Bohemian Rhapsody there. That means it's time to turn to the music exam, and we're joined by Assistant Professor of Music Education in Trinity College Dublin, Susan McCormick. Susan, we're not playing that just because we're all Queen fans. It's part of the syllabus. Along with what other pieces of music this year?
Yeah, so we have Bohemian Rhapsody by Queen. We also have a Tchaikovsky Romeo and Juliet fantasy overture, a beautiful cantata by Johann Sebastian Bach, cantata BWV 78, Jesu Deina Meine Seele. And then we also have a contemporary work by an Irish composer, Gerald Barry, the Piano Quartet No. 1.
So let's start with the listening paper element of higher level. What is the format of that?
Yeah, so the listening paper is an hour and a half exam with 6 questions, and all students must attempt all 6 questions. The first 4 questions are in relation to those set works that we just mentioned. And then there's an Irish music question, which is divided into 2 parts, a listening and an essay portion. And then a question 6, which is a piece of music that you haven't studied in class. And the important thing about the listening paper is to remember that it is a listening paper. And I think we forget that all of the time. So often when you go in, you're trying to think back to what you learnt in class around a particular piece, particularly when we're thinking of the set works that you should be really, really familiar with. And the CD starts, and the first question is, what instrument is playing the main melody. And you're thinking, oh, what was it that my teacher told me again? Oh, I think it was the violin. And you forget to open your ear and listen. It is a listening exam, and the questions are assessing your understanding of the work, but also your responding to the aural skills that you've developed over the course of the Leaving Cert as well.
You mentioned there question five always being on Irish music and having two parts. What are the two parts about?
Yeah, so the first part typically divided into three excerpts, so three different musical excerpts of Irish music, and they'd ask you to identify things like instruments, particular time signatures, features of traditional music. They might have a piece of fusion music, so you might be identifying features that are non-traditional as well. And then the second half, you've got five different options to choose from, and you write a short essay in response to one of the essay titles.
And question six is about a piece of music you've never heard. That's a bit tough for students. It can be a bit, oh God.
It is, but typically the pieces are gorgeous. They range from, you know, classical pieces to contemporary. I'm pretty sure there was a Beatles piece on last year. And they are asking, you know, the questions are every year they're much of the same. So they're asking you again to identify instruments. They're asking you to identify texture. They're asking you maybe to identify time signature. So what I would say when you're preparing, not just for question six, but for the whole music exam, is to engage a lot in passive listening, because passive listening is really, really an incredible tool that requires no stress and no effort. So passive listening you can do wherever you are, when you're in the car, when you're on the way to work or to school on the Dart, when you're getting ready, when you're cooking the dinner, whatever you're doing, even when you're doing your maths homework, you can be listening to music in the background. And particularly when it comes to familiarity of the set works, that seeps into your brain with no effort whatsoever. It's like, you know, when you're listening to a song and suddenly you know the lyrics. You've never sat down and learnt those lyrics, but you find yourself singing along. And so that's a really, really great way to just get that ear awake. And then the active listening comes in then when you start to engage analytically and ask yourself, okay, I'm just going to stop the music there and just ask myself, what did I hear there? What instrument did I hear? Okay, what was the texture? Can I feel the pulse? And you do that with every piece of music that you listen to. It could be, you know, a pop song. It could be anything. And that's going to really, really help to develop your ear and your aural skills over the coming months.
The next part of the exam paper is a composition paper. So what's involved in that?
Yeah, so again, six questions on this paper, but this time you only have to answer two. So one melody question and one harmony question. There are three to choose from for melody and three for harmony. And for this, you do need to be a little bit careful around your time. So for the listening exam, the CD starts and you have no control over when the CD stops again. You just follow as the CD goes. With the composition, you need to be in control of your own time. So just to be aware of that, and I would be probably recommending around 33.0 minutes for melody, 55.0 for harmony, and then you've 10 minutes to play with. So for the melody question, most people will do question one, which is continuation of a given opening. You're given four bars and you compose a further 12 bars to make 16 bar melody. And then most people will do question five, which is a harmony question where you insert backing chords and also compose a left hand accompaniment. And when it comes to technique for this, it's all about practice, and also feedback. You know, the music exam, the written exam, is typically towards the end of the Leaving Cert exams. I think this year it's the end of the third week. And often students will have a couple of days free before that last day and they think, oh, well, I'll just worry about music then. I won't worry about it now because I've got all these other subjects to be thinking about. But music is not a subject that you can cram, in no way. So especially when it comes to composition, continuous practice is absolutely vital. And also understanding your feedback. So when you look at the feedback to go, okay, what are the areas here that I'm needing to work on and why? And you know, we need to be able to hear our melodies that we're writing as well. So if you find it difficult to sing or to play yourself, pop it into a music technology software platform and it can play back for you. That's really, really important that you understand the feedback. And just in relation to that, I know that students are very concerned around what marks they're going to get, particularly for the melody, because melody can be a hard one to get high marks in. And the marking scheme, it's a tricky one to get your head around. In some ways, it can be a little bit elusive and students find it really difficult. So they're looking at the marks all of the time. And I heard this gorgeous quote on a podcast that I was listening to the other day. And I think they were talking about an Olympian or some athlete anyway. And they were saying how you have to take your mind off the podium and focus on the pedals, because the podium is the distraction. You've got to think about the action that you need to take now in order to make that improvement. And there's plenty of time to see a really, really, really vast improvement in your composition writing, providing you're really, really good at keeping, you know, at least one melody and harmony a week, getting that feedback, and also familiarizing yourself with what the examiners are looking for and with the marking scheme.
We have the music practical examinations coming up. What's your advice on how to handle those?
Okay, so the music practical exams are coming up in a few weeks, and most people will be doing the performing elective, and that will mean that 50% of their overall marks will be going to this exam. So it's a big exam. And there are typically three different options here. Students will either be performing six pieces or songs, or option two would be to perform four pieces on one instrument and four on another, or maybe you could sing four and play four. And the third option that people tend to go for is performing four pieces or singing four songs and then doing music technology. So in relation to music technology, it's familiarity with the software. The great thing about that exam is that there are no surprises. You know exactly what's going to happen in the order that it's going to happen, and the examiner can ask you nothing else apart from what we already know is going to come up. So that's super. And in relation to the performance, I would say try and play in front of other people if you can, as much as you can, to kind of get used to that is really important. I would also say practice when you are practicing, to keep your practice very focused and set goals, really achievable goals, so that you can achieve that goal within the time set for the practical or for the practice as well. And I think the other thing to say about the practical is in relation to what the examiners are looking for. Mm-hmm. They're not looking for perfection. You know, the examiners have a gorgeous job, actually. They go in and they sit back. They get to sit back and listen to people performing all day. It's so gorgeous. And that you're bringing a little bit of joy to the examiner's life. Let's not forget that, because that's what you are doing. And the examiners are there. I always remember an examiner coming to the school that I worked in for many years. And he came and he said, "I'm here to give you marks." And they really are. And so what you're thinking about is not perfection, but it's how am I communicating to the examiner and how am I connecting with the music. And again, good to familiarize yourself with the marking scheme here, because there's a slightly different criteria or what they're looking for is slightly different depending on whether you're performing classical pieces or whether you're performing traditional. So have a look at that and make sure that you know what they're looking for. If you're performing classical, think about the shape, think about the dynamics, think about, is the style appropriate? You know, are you playing it appropriate to the style of the piece or the genre? In relation to traditional music, you know, you're thinking of the pulse, and in relation to popular, if you're singing, for example, are you connecting with the lyrics? Are you thinking about the meaning of the lyrics? And that's really important too. The one thing that we can do as well, which is very helpful, is a little technique which you kind of put yourself, it's like mental rehearsal. You imagine yourself in the zone. So if you know where the performance is going to take place, that's really beneficial, because you can go through the whole process in your head. You can picture yourself sitting outside the room, how you're going to be feeling, picture yourself walking in, picture yourself, you know, having a conversation with the examiner, getting set up, go through the motions, and that brings all of the feels right to the surface. So you can kind of think, how would I deal with that? And that can be a really useful technique when it comes to performance and just trying to ease the nerves.
Finally, Susan, we mentioned there Bohemian Rhapsody. Mm. Any predictions on what will be coming up in the exam this year?
Do you know, I hate to predict, because typically if there is a pattern, they'll break the pattern. I suppose if I was absolutely pushed, I would say movement one of the Bach cantata has not come up in an awfully long time.
Okay, good advice there. Thank you so much, Susan. Okay, Susan McCormick there, Assistant Professor in Music Education in Trinity College, Dublin. Thank you so much. Now, Study Hub regular Jen Treshek of Way Ahead Therapy is back with us to provide some down-to-earth advice on approaching studies and exam time. Jen, I've seen somebody already comment on TikTok on the Study Hub promo video, "Leave me alone, I'm already stressed." What's your words of advice for people who are already feeling that little bit overwhelmed 3 months out?
It's so true. And what I see is people who are stressed kind of falling into two camps. We've got the kind of people who are in the fight mode. So studying nonstop at this stage, you know, maybe kind of sacrificing sleep, not doing restful things and feeling guilty if they're not actually studying the whole time, which is not necessarily helpful. Or the other way, people in kind of flight mode where they're avoiding thinking about study at all and they keep meaning to get around to it and it'll happen tomorrow, 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 and they're not actually cracking down and doing any work. So they're avoiding what might be a little bit scared. So, you know, when people are saying, we don't want to talk about it, maybe they're in the more avoidant camp.
Yeah, I think I was definitely in the avoidant camp. I spent more time doing study planning revision timetables than actually doing revision. So if you're having those feelings, we'll start off with that flight mode. How do you ground yourself, center yourself and say, right, what can I do? What are the things that just get that bit of study done?
Absolutely. And it starts with small steps. You know, you don't climb a mountain by looking at the top. You start with the first step. So breaking study right down into small chunks, even opening 5 minutes of a book. Rather, if you feel overwhelmed by the big study timetable and getting going with it, you know, just do three tasks in a day. Set yourself three tasks and you'll get that sense of achievement that at least I've done something. And once that ball starts rolling, it starts to get a little bit easier. So don't over kind of worry about it. Don't compare to what other people are doing or
so
saying
important.
They're doing.
Yeah.
Just focus on your own race and think, what do I need to do just to get started?
Yeah. I think people tell you they're doing 3 hours of study. I don't think that's true. So I don't think our brains are designed for that. You know, we need to take rest and we need to take breaks. How much sleep should your Leaving Cert student be getting?
Sleep and rest are both so key. So, I mean, everybody knows about sleep. Everybody knows that, you know, 7-8 hours is really what we should be getting. And if we're not getting sleep when we're studying, we're not going to be laying down those memories that we need to be able to recall. So you might be studying 5, 6, 7, 8, 9 hours, but you won't be retaining the information unless you're resting and sleeping in order to be able to process it. But also rest is really important. So not even just sleep, actually taking time away to refresh your brain. As you said, you know, you can't study non-stop and retain the information. So being able to step away and actively rest, which sounds strange, but doing something that refreshes you rather than drains you. And, you know, when people are saying, oh, I'm taking a break, I would always say, are you actually feeling refreshed after that break? Mm-hmm. Or are you taking a break and maybe doom scrolling or watching Netflix for, you know, doing a binge watch? And then you end up feeling even more drained and guilty, which kind of reduces the motivation. So thinking about rest being maybe a little bit more active, you know, it could be going for a walk. It could be having a chat with somebody. It could be going to the gym, listening to some music, getting some relaxation that way, so that when you've had that break, do you feel refreshed? Yeah. And then you've got more capacity for going back to the study.
Because if you're staring at a textbook for hours on end, then going staring at a screen for hours on end, it's not resting.
Yeah, okay. Your brain's still working. Yeah.
For parents in this situation, what's your advice on to how to approach, you know, supporting whoever in their family is doing a Leaving Cert?
Yeah, it's a big, and particularly with the mock results coming in now, parents are looking at mocks and maybe getting a little bit panicky themselves. For parents, if you're worried about your young person, I think first of all, take a breath yourself. Wait to find a time where you're both a little bit more relaxed to talk about the exams. And I think sometimes in families where study can be a little bit fraught, we can all get a little bit defensive when it comes to exams, or it can feel a little bit blaming. So, you know, take some time when you're both feeling a little bit more relaxed to talk about, just check in, you know, how is it going? How are you feeling about it? What do you need? What support would be helpful? Rather than getting into, you're not doing enough, you need to be studying more, which will just push your young person back further. They won't respond to that and they won't tell you what they're doing then.
I always think a great time is when you're both in the car and you're driving along and, you know, it's so relaxing.
Side by side, less pressure, going for a walk, even cooking dinner together, you know, but at a time where you're a little bit more chilled. And just let them know if you're concerned, you know, be honest about that. I'm a little bit concerned about where you're at. How do you feel it's going? Ask the questions. And rather than, you know, as a parent going in with your views and what you think is important, ask your young person their views, what they feel is important, how they feel. Nobody wants to do badly.
No.
They want to find a way forward. So getting together, you know, recognizing you're both on the same team, you both want the same, and get on the same page.
Okay, so sitting down in the exam hall, you have a really good bit of advice on the five senses grounding technique. Tell me about that.
Absolutely. And it's funny, with grounding, that's really about being present. As Susan was saying, you know, sometimes we're so up in our head, we're not actually focused on what we have in front of us. So grounding is a way just to bring yourself into the moment. And it just takes a couple of seconds. You know, it's not as long as you might think, but five senses, using all of our senses to orientate ourselves, can be really helpful. So the five, it's using our sight, first of all. What are five things I can see in this room? You know, familiarizing yourself with your space, where you are. Touch, four things I can touch. So I'm touching the desk or the floor or the chair. I'm just coming into my body a little bit rather than my head. Three things I can hear. So we're starting to slow down the mind a little bit and listening for, you know, can I hear the rustling of the papers? Can I hear the people near me maybe looking through stuff, the examiner walking up and down? Two is smell and taste. So, you know, what can I smell? Maybe there's a nice perfume, or, you know, maybe my lip gloss I'm having a little bit of a chew on. Something that is orienting me into my body. And then one big deep breath. And it just takes a couple of seconds, but it brings you out of your head, and it's time well spent to then be able to focus on the page and what's in front of you, rather than feeling overwhelmed with everything else that's going on in the background.
We talked about there about comparison, and I mentioned to Connor that fear when somebody asks for extra paper. I think it's so important not to be comparing yourself to other people, how much they're studying, what they're doing in the exam hall. Just do your own thing, because everybody studies in different ways, don't they?
Absolutely. Everybody is running their own race, and different things will work for different people. Everybody's aiming for different, you know, outcomes. It's really, really difficult when you get into comparison. And within your group of friends, you know, do think about who you're surrounding yourself with, and maybe have an agreement, you know, let's not actually talk about what everybody's doing, or let's have time away from talking about, you know, if we're going out, let's go out and not talk about the leaving at all. Yeah. You know, stress free. Don't dissect afterwards, unless that, you know, unless you've an agreement that a couple of you, that helps. But really think about what you need, and surround yourself with people who are going to be supportive rather than adding to your feelings of stress in relation to the exams.
If somebody is worried about getting their mock results, or, you know, just, you know, they're not, the mocks didn't go the way they wanted, how would you say to maybe handle that setback, or, you know, deal with it?
Yeah, I mean, it's really important to remember there's still 12 weeks to go. There's still plenty of time, so it's never too late. If you're feeling very heightened and very stressed, and you might just need somebody to talk to about it, and there are supports available. So, you know, guidance counsellors in school are great, year heads, you know, just have a chat with them and let them know how you're feeling. They can help you to kind of plan how to manage things. There's also Jigsaw Online, jigsaw.ie is fantastic. It's got great resources and actually online support. So you can have an online chat. There's kind of video calls or text with a trained health professional just to talk through your, you know, how you're feeling.
And stuff. Thank you so much for that, Jen Trajek there of Way Ahead Therapy. Thank you for coming in to us today. That's it for this week's Study Hub. Next week on Study Hub, we'll be looking at Maths Ordinary Level Paper 1, Biology and French. If you want to get in touch with the podcast or have any questions you want answered, drop us an email to studyhub@rte.ie. See you next week. 5, 6, 5, 6, 7.